You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and We Saw the Devil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Uxoricide, from Latin uxor meaning wife and side meaning to cut to kill. Uxoricide is the murder of one's wife or girlfriend. Chris Watts, Scott Peterson, Oscar Pistorius, Drew Peterson, and another case I've covered on this podcast, let's be real guys, Barry Morphew. Yes, I know that he hasn't gone on trial yet, but if you've read the evidence dump that happened about a month ago, you know what I'm talking about. We hear about a handful of these cases every year. Some become sensationalized, like the Watts, Peterson, Pistorius, and Drew Peterson cases. But others fly under the radar for whatever reason. And for this episode, I would like to cover a really unique case that I promise you 100% flew under your radar. Before we get into that, let's just get our housekeeping out of the way. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. I'm Robin. Please feel free to check out our website. It's WeSawTheDevil.com. And from there, you can follow us across all social media platforms. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Patreon, which if you like the show, love the show, and want to financially back the show, you can do so at Patreon at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil, where for as little as $3 a month, you can financially support the show and get some stuff in return. This last month, our patrons got the Mammoth Book of True Crime as a gift, the audiobook, and postcards should be on the way for the month of January. So yeah, really cool. Love our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. And guys, don't forget the best thing that you can do for any podcast that you listen to, not just mine, any podcast that you listen to, is to leave a 5-star review. Take the time, 30 seconds, go to whatever platform you're listening to us on or the other podcasts that you love, and take the time to leave that 5-star review. It means the absolute world to us and actually has a lot to do with sponsorships and ads and things like that. So please take the 30 seconds and let the podcast you love know that you care. So let's go ahead and get into the episode. Homewood, a small commuter suburb outside of Birmingham, Alabama, is not a safe city. It never has been. In 2021, per FBI statistics, your chance of being a victim of a crime is 1 in 32. Your chance of being a victim of a violent crime is 1 in 341. Homewood, Alabama is more dangerous than 75% of all other cities in Alabama. And based on crime trends, it's basically the same now as it was back in 2013. The only difference is that there are many more robberies and property crimes. So it wasn't terribly surprising when on the night of July 22nd, 2013, a couple on Hughes Circle in Homewood heard glass break somewhere in their neighborhood. It was sometime between 11 and 11:30 p.m., so they called it into police. No one in Homewood could have anticipated what that following day would bring. 53-year-old Robert Shahan and his wife Karen moved to Homewood, Alabama in 2009 so that he could be an associate pastor at First Baptist Church in Birmingham. He served as its children and families pastor and facilities director. The couple moved from Charlotte, North Carolina, after Richard had spent 7 years as associate pastor in education administration for the Hickory Grove Baptist Church there. He split his time between Charlotte, North Carolina, and Brentwood, Tennessee, assisting Kimball Knight Ministries with their resourcing. Robert felt as though he was destined to become a pastor even when he was a small child. He was ordained into the ministry in 1983 after graduating from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas in 1985. He and Karen married and moved to Birmingham in 1989, where they then spent 10 years. There, Richard first served as an associate pastor at Shades Mountain Baptist Church before they moved back to Texas, where he became a full-time pastor at First Baptist in Bryan. In 2003, Richard created his own Christian and internet-based curriculum provider called One Vine Incorporated. He did this full-time until 2010, right after he and Karen then moved back to Homewood, Alabama. Because this case did not achieve a sensational national status, there's very little known about Karen Shahan personally. She and Richard had two sons, Kyle and Colin, with Kyle attending Lipscomb University in Nashville, literally 7 minutes from my house. Colin was actively serving in the Army and stationed at Fort Campbell, living in Clarksville, Tennessee. Karen was also a proud grandmother of two young grandchildren. The night of July 22, 2013, sometime between 11 and 11:30, a couple on Hughes Circle in Homewood, Alabama, heard glass break. They reported the noise to the police and went to bed. The following morning, the Homewood police received a phone call from a manager at the local Hobby Lobby. Karen Shahan had not shown up to work, which was incredibly unlike her. She was punctual, responsible, very well known, and loved by almost everyone in the conservative community. After many attempted phone calls and each one going unanswered, the manager knew that something was wrong and her gut instinct told her to call police immediately. So the police were dispatched to 102 Hughes Circle and arrived at 11:15 a.m. for the wellness check. After knocking on the door for multiple minutes and no answer, the police decided to go inside. And what they found was horrifying, especially for small-town cops whose experience primarily lied with occasional muggings, robberies, and vehicle thefts. In fact, one of the investigating detectives called it, quote, the most brutal murder he had ever examined. And it was brutal. Karen Shahan was found deceased on the living room sofa where she normally ate and watched TV. She had been cut, slashed, and stabbed to death. It was very clear that the attack had happened without warning, as there was unchewed food in Karen's mouth, as well as food that had spilled onto her chest and lap. Although the full autopsy is not available to the public, she was stabbed, quote, many times in the neck, head, and torso, and had minor defensive wounds on her hands and arms. Semen was found inside of her vaginal vault, but there was no sign of sexual assault. And the semen did not belong to her husband. It was from an unidentified man. There were footprints on the back door, which had been broken, and that was likely the breaking glass that the neighbors had heard the night before. Blood covered the living room from the carpet to the walls, and blood had been tracked throughout the entire house. To say that it was a grisly scene is an absolute understatement. Media descended upon Hughes Circle, and reporters wanted comments. Police remained mum, save for one officer, Sergeant Andrew Didcocht, who said, quote, we don't know if this is random, a burglary gone bad or what. We just don't know. So the police began interviewing neighbors. And yes, there had been sporadic burglaries in the area in the weeks preceding Karen Shahan's murder. And as I said earlier, Homewood, Alabama was not considered a safe city overall. A neighbor from one street behind Hughes Circle was willing to talk to reporters after a conversation that he had with a police officer. He told a reporter, quote, the officer told me that when a burglar breaks in and there's somebody in the house, they get out of there as fast as they can. If a burglar is surprised and threatened by someone, he might push them, he might even knock them over the head with something like a flashlight, but what he doesn't do is hang around long enough to stab someone to death. He said that burglars are thieves, not killers. They want to get in, get what they can, and haul ass. He told me that Mrs. Shahan's murder wasn't some run-of-the-mill burglary gone wrong. It was planned. Now, word travels fast, especially in small southern towns. Shortly after Karen's body was discovered, church leadership became aware of the situation. And here's the thing. Richard Shahan, Karen's husband, he had left the day before to go visit his sons in Tennessee. His plan was to first go to Fort Campbell to see Colin, and then on the way home, stop in Franklin, Tennessee, to see his son Kyle. He also had hotel reservations already on the books. The distance between Homewood, Alabama and Franklin, Tennessee was about 185 miles, or driving, about 2 hours and 45 minutes. Richard was notified of his wife's death by church authorities and then made the drive from Franklin to Homewood. On July 27th, more than 200 people attended Karen Shahan's memorial and funeral. Richard appeared above all to be the grieving, loving husband. The community rallied behind the beloved pastor in a show of faith and respect. However, like all cases of this nature, Richard had to be interrogated and questioned. Richard Shahan was informally questioned on the evening of the 23rd, the day Karen's body was found. And then on Wednesday, August 7th, he was called into the Homewood Police Station and formally interrogated. Naturally, police asked him where he was the evening that Karen was attacked. Richard's story remained the same. He told investigators that he had left Homewood on Monday, July 22nd to go visit Kyle and Colin, his and Karen's sons. He said he first drove to Franklin, Tennessee, again a distance of roughly 185 miles, where he had the hotel reservations. Now, investigators had already pulled his cell phone records, credit card purchases, and electronic hotel lock to track his movements, so they were ready to put up hard evidence and data against Richard's stories. They were able to see that Richard Shahan had stopped for gas, eaten at a restaurant, stopped at Walmart, and bought tickets to two different movies in Franklin. At 3:25 p.m. on the 22nd, he turned his cell phone completely off. It was not turned on again until July 23rd at 2:30 a.m., right as he opened his hotel door with his key. And if that kind of scenario sounds familiar, guys, Barry Morphew did the same thing, turned his cell phone off in the afternoon and then didn't turn it back on until early in the morning. The next day, on August 8th, Richard Shahan was arrested and officially taken in for questioning. Now, Alabama law states that if a probable cause hearing is not held within 48 hours of arrest, the person detained must be released. And released he was. Richard returned to life as usual without Karen by his side. He visited his sons and then returned to First Baptist in Birmingham to a congregation waiting for him with open arms. That was until January 1st of 2014, when the Department of Homeland Security snatched Richard Shahan right out of a boarding line in the Nashville, Tennessee International Airport as he was trying to board a flight to Germany. He was immediately arrested. The arrest affidavit said that Richard Shahan was, quote, fugitive from justice, wanted out of Jefferson County, Alabama for homicide. It also stated that a customs lookout was issued for him in the event he tried to leave the state or country. Department of Homeland Security agents apprehended him after the computer system red flagged him after he checked in. What was Richard doing going to Germany? Well, the police had a pretty good idea because by the end of December, again, they had pulled and cataloged more than 3,000 of Richard Shahan's email, phone, and text message correspondence, along with Karen's. And what they found while collecting that evidence was about to shock the entire state of Alabama. So on December 31st, the day before he was arrested, Richard Shahan had resigned from his position at the First Baptist Church. Now, after Karen's death, Richard had remained on staff at First Baptist in Birmingham, but he was actively planning to leave the country. The church still supported him, so he had active income, but his next move was actually accepting a position with the Children's Ministry of the Bible Mission International. This would guarantee a move abroad, primarily in Kazakhstan. And for those of you who are not familiar, Kazakhstan is a Central Asian country, former Soviet state, and it borders both China and Russia. Strange, right? Why would he try to go there? Well, that's because upon examining Richard's text messages, they discovered that he had multiple online boyfriends. Multiple emails between him and an unnamed man discussed his plans once he arrived in Germany. Once reaching Germany, Richard planned to fly to Russia, then back to the UK. His grand goal was becoming a citizen of the UK and marrying an online boyfriend who he had been having an affair with for a couple years. Not only was Richard planning to bail out of his ministry job with the Kazakhstan orphans to marry an online lover, he was caught carrying $27,000 worth of foreign currency, euros, pounds, and Kazakh. Now, suffice it to say, Richard was leaving and never coming back to the United States. He was extradited back to Homewood, Alabama, where he went before a judge and was released on a $100,000 bond. He essentially remained on house arrest at his mother's house. Now, the news about Richard having multiple gay lovers spread like wildfire, but the church still supported him and even financially backed him. He was able to hire John Lintnine and Wendell Sheffield, two very well-known and powerful Birmingham defense attorneys. In August of 2017, a year and 1 month after the death of Karen Shahan, Richard Shahan was indicted by a grand jury for her murder. The indictment read that he was accused of, quote, stabbing her and cutting her throat with an unknown object. 2 months later, in October, evidence was released to the public. And here is how prosecutors believe the entire situation went down. On the night that Karen was attacked, Richard drove to Franklin, Tennessee to supposedly visit their sons, Colin and Kyle, right? Before he departed, he made a reservation at a hotel in Franklin and stopped at multiple gas stations along the way. He ate alone at a restaurant, bought tickets again to two different movies, stopped at the theater to pick up the tickets, and then turned his phone off completely by 3:25 p.m. in Franklin, Tennessee. The only other digital footprint that Richard left was a purchase at a Franklin, Tennessee Walmart, which, funny enough, it is actually the Walmart that I frequent. There was no further tracking of Richard until 2:30 a.m. on July 23rd, after Karen's murder. As police began to confront Richard with the evidence, he finally caved in admitting that he was having affairs with multiple men from various dating sites that he was on. But police really needed to track him during the hours of 3:25 p.m. on the 22nd and 2:30 a.m. on the 23rd. Richard claimed that he had started to watch one of the movies, but had to go to Birmingham to grab his CPAP in order to sleep, and that he returned to Franklin just in time to catch the end of the second movie. That's obviously a lie. Richard also originally claimed that he had changed his clothes after initially arriving at the hotel before going to see the movies. He said he came back after the movies and slept through the night. Well, the card reader in his room indicated that Richard Shahan first entered his room, for the very first time at 2:30 in the morning. And surveillance video showed that he never actually changed clothes. He was wearing the same clothes from 2:30 in the morning until the next day when he left and checked out. He also told police that he bought gas with his credit card during his return trip to Birmingham, but there was no record of the purchase showing up on his credit card at any point. Police believed that he went to Franklin to have sex with a man he met online under the guise of visiting his children, that he had sex with the man, traveled back to Homewood to murder Karen, and took the semen from that night's partner's used condom to place around Karen's vaginal vault in order for it to look like a sex attack, and also throw off police. It became quickly apparent that Richard Shahan was a liar, and he wasn't only lying to police. Investigators discovered from reading Karen Shahan's emails that she was aware that Richard was lying to her as well. You see, Richard had a secret. He was born and raised in the 1950s in the conservative South. Being openly gay and living his truth was certainly not an option, especially as a religious person. So Richard went online, and he had a whole series of online lovers while he was married with Karen. Male lovers. A whole harem of them, to be exact. And believe it or not, Karen knew about most of them. Here's an email she wrote a friend approximately 17 months before her murder. Karen wrote, "I told him that he cannot keep both lives, that he will have to lose one of them. I said that if he was having any interactions that were not right before God, that he should go to God and be completely honest with him because he knows anyway. I told him that God will reveal it to me. I told him that any texting or Gmailing that does not bring glory to God has to go, which should give him a clue that I do know because I said Gmail and that is not a form of communication that is common for us." And here's another one, 16 months before Karen's death. Quote, "I told him that I did not want to rub salt in a wound, but I knew that he had talked to that man, Andrew, about the baby coming, and I did not want any of those men to be involved with our family. He took it well and said that all involvements were over and that they were all gone out of his life." Karen said that she gave Richard an ultimatum, but it was clearly one that he did not respect or follow. On January 26th of 2013, Richard emailed the British government about marriage there. Quote, "Hello, my name is Richard Shahan. I am a U.S. citizen currently living in the U.S. We would like to be married after I arrive there, especially since your country allows such. We realize this entire procedure will cost and are trying to gain an understanding of all the fees and expenses associated with such an undertaking." And there was a whole series of sexually explicit text messages leaked to the press, which I'm not going to read here. They are widely available online if you would like to seek those out. But very graphic text messages surrounding how much Richard loves penis and the penis, you know, quote unquote dick pics that his online boyfriends were sending to him and what they looked like and so on and what he wanted to do to them and so forth. But perhaps the most damning text was to, again, his British boyfriend. Richard said, quote, "I'm in a legal marriage contract. There is not an acceptable way for me to dissolve that and continue with the things that are important to me, like my job and children. There's only one way I could become legally single, and I have to wait until God grants me that gift. It will come. The woman I live with is slowly killing herself. She is diabetic and refuses to take care of herself physically. Her mother died early with the same disease and did the same thing to her body. So I pray and wait. It will happen in God's timing. I pray you don't find me cold and unfeeling. I do care about her. After these texts were made public, Richard's sexuality quickly went into the limelight. Richard's defense attorney, John Lentine, expressed contempt for the damaging emails and the state's allegations, declaring, quote, "This case is going to be tried on fact, not on someone's sexual orientation, not based on someone's fidelity or infidelity in a marriage. That's what lawyers and people are supposed to do." The trial in State of Alabama versus Richard Lee Shahan was originally scheduled to begin April 18th of 2016, but Judge Laura Petro rescheduled it, and that trial was moved to begin January 9th, 2017. Then the defense asked for additional time, and then the DA's office recused itself entirely from the case, asking for the Alabama Attorney General's office to step in and prosecute. More time was added with a finalized trial date of May 2017. But then the unthinkable happened. Mid-April 2017, the Alabama Attorney General's office released a statement. Quote, "The evidence currently in the state's possession is insufficient to move forward with prosecution. Richard Shahan was free to go, his passport was returned to him, and he has never been seen or heard from again." There were a couple motions and orders between the state and the defense attorneys actually dealing with the amount of semen that police took out of Karen Shahan's vaginal vault in terms of additional testing, trying to identify where that who that belonged to. And it just kind of fell away. At one point, the attorney general's office was like, has it been lost? Like, where is it? And it just completely faded away. The whole case just completely poof up in thin air. Richard was not prosecuted. Richard was gone. And now Richard is gone. No one knows exactly where he is, who he is. I mean, just completely off the grid. Prosecutors dropped the case in such a way that Richard, if additional information or additional evidence does come out, that Richard can in fact be arrested and tried officially for the murder. So that is still not off the table. But likely, guys, it's not going to happen. And unfortunately, Karen Shahan and the family and her family are likely not actually going to receive justice in this case. So what do you guys think? Were any of you familiar with this case, with this situation before this episode? If so, do you think that Richard did it? Or do you find that some people are just incredibly unlucky with the way that things kind of pan out in their life or decisions that they make that look incredibly suspicious and they actually had nothing to do with it? I could do a whole series on just that, on people who are in the wrong place, wrong time, or lied about something and then something happened and then, you know, there they are in jail, prison, death row even. It's crazy. But to me, according to the shadiness and, you know, the timing of everything, it definitely looks like Richard Shahan somehow eluded justice. That's it for today, guys. I know it's kind of a short one, but thank you so much for listening. Greatly appreciated. This case has kind of stuck in my head for years now. I remember when it happened. I remember it being in the news. I mean, one of Richard's sons goes to college about like 8 minutes from my house. He went to the Walmart that I frequent. Haven't been in a while, but used to frequent on, you know, almost like a monthly basis. And he was arrested right here in our airport trying to leave the country. So a lot of kind of hometown ties for me in particular in this case. And it's just crazy to think that a man who likely committed one of the most heinous murders that Birmingham, Alabama has seen in recent years is just probably free and off frolicking somewhere in Europe with an online boyfriend. It's just absolutely crazy to me. Also coming this week, again, is episode 2 in the Cannibal series. And thank you so much for all of the feedback and like support that I've gotten on the first episode. It seems like a lot of you really enjoyed it. I'm really excited. This is one of my interests with true crime. The psychology behind cannibalism is so fascinating to me. So with episode 1, if you haven't listened, give it a listen. It's the last episode published. Episode 2, we are going to be delving into those each types of cannibalism and going over cases, instances, the psychology of it, and so forth. And it's really, really, really fascinating. I mean, I'll honestly have to like stop myself from researching it, or I will stay up all night doing it. it. It's just so fascinating to me. So that's also coming. And then finally, I will have an episode of criminal musicians. A lot of you have asked me for another episode of that. So that is also coming this week. Again, if you're not familiar, check out the previous episode I posted on that, where I will pick out some musicians who have criminal pasts. And we're going to delve into musicians, rock stars, whoever, musicians that have done some pretty heinous things. So that's the lineup for this week, guys. Again, you're listening to We Sell the Devil. This is Robin. You can check us out at wesellthedevil.com, where you can find us across all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so forth. Give us a follow there. And also our Patreon. If you're liking the show so far and you want to financially back it, throw us a few bucks, get some stuff in return. Check us out there at patreon.com/wesellthedevil. Until next crime.